This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org.
This is Walter Koenig, Chekhov from Star Trek, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Risk is our business.
It's like nothing we've dealt with before.
By golly, Jim, I'm beginning to think I can cure a rainy day.
I can't change the laws of physics.
Welcome, everyone, to Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated podcast that covers the original and new cast of Captain Kirk and the Enterprise. I am Ken Tripp.
And I am Zach Moore, and we're going to explore as many Trek references and pop culture as we can remember, with a lot of help from our great participants on the Babel Conference this week.
We've been going back and forth on a lot of subjects. We've gotten a lot of great ideas from our listeners as well. And then this one, we were just kind of kicking around. And, you know, I don't know if I've ever mentioned it to you, Zach, but I always love it. And I'm sure all Star Trek fans do, as we're seeing from some of the responses we're getting in the Babel Conference. When Star Trek is mentioned in something that has nothing to do with Star Trek, right, in pop culture. And it's almost like you're in on an inside joke. Is I know like 2/3 of my family, they're like, what does that mean? You know, and I always smile a little bit wider and laugh a little bit louder when it goes in that direction. And it's true because Star Trek really is everywhere. And so I thought it'd be fun to start a journey. And I think this is going to be a journey that's going to go on and on. I'm thinking multiple episodes over the next few months or years where we're going back to find some new things to talk about. And how pop culture makes Star Trek actually a larger club.
Yeah, absolutely. And I find that older media is more entertaining because, as I've mentioned probably a few times on this podcast now, I feel like we're in this, you know, we're in the golden age of nerds, right? We're you know, but pop culture references are at its peak. Nostalgia is at critical mass right now. People are like, hey, remember this? We're going to reference it, right? Family Guy, for example. And Family Guy... Well, it was funny, but I love Family Guy from back in the day, and they're like exhibit A of, hey, you remember this and this? It's silly. Let's have a quick scene and move on, right?
Right.
And, you know, hey, there's some Star Trek stuff in that we'll bring up as well, but that's where I feel like we are in pop culture right now. So to your point, Ken, about, you know, being surprised by stuff like this, like I feel like, you know, a few years ago and even longer, it was more surprising. It was more refreshing. Like, oh man, they referenced this show I like. Cause the, you know, comedy wasn't always self-referential to pop culture the way it is today. Like, I feel like every comedy nowadays, it has like this prerequisite list of, you must reference all the hot, you know, things of today, right? Or big cultural points of today. And because the nerds have inherited the earth, as they say, you see Star Trek, Star Wars, sci-fi references everywhere with no shame, and everybody kind of knows what you're talking about. But, you know, some of the ones we'll delve into here are, like, some of the very first and influential ones that established, like, the way to correctly parody or reference a beloved franchise.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, when we were talking about this week's topic, I don't know why, but the very first thing that jumped out at me was Tarantino's Kill Bill with the opening placard, right? Revenge is a dish best served cold. Ancient or old Klingon proverb,
right,
was the phrase underneath that. And I just knew right from the beginning, I am going to like this movie because this guy likes what I like. And I don't know why, but it just made me smile. And, you know, I did enjoy the Kill Bill movies. They were, you know, I'm a Tarantino fan, I have to admit. Boy, it just kind of kicked things off. Now, you say we're going back further, but that was the first thing that kind of jumped into my head. But when I think about the very first time I remember a Star Trek parody, it was from Saturday Night Live. And I'm sure a lot of people now, I don't know the age groups in here, and we can post it on the Babel Conference for that, but was the episode about their cancellation. where they're trying to get away from a car that had the NBC executives.
Now, I've seen that. I've seen clips of that in like Star Trek specials, but I've also seen on the Best of John Belushi,
Saturday
Night Live DVD. My dad's a big John Belushi and Saturday Night Live fan, so I think for some holiday, I got that for him as a present, and we watched it. And of course, that skit was on there, and Belushi is Kirk, and Aykroyd is McCoy, and Chevy Chase is Spock. I love that Aykroyd is McCoy, and he has the mustache.
Yeah,
very distracting. But he was playing Gerald Ford with the mustache too, and it's like, what are you doing, Aykroyd? But you know, Saturday Night Live. This is, I guess, it must have been the first season or the second season or the first couple.
Very
years.
First, because okay. Chevy Chase was only on it for one season.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and you know, as a kid, it was always a treat because my parents were pretty good about letting us stay up and watch Saturday Night, which was a very adult humor back then. And I don't think I was a big Star Trek fan. Of course, I was pretty young, but I do remember that in particular, and just laughing hysterically with that damn car on the view screen, and them never leaving character, and the way the skit ends with the person who was playing the NBC executive just going to Shatner, hey, you got a call from a margarine company. Because Shatner was big with Promise was the name of the company. And he in the 70s, he was on every night with Promise Tastes Like Butter. Promise. You know, that was his thing. So it was pretty cool. And Saturday Night Live did a few more skits, if you'll remember. I don't know if you saw the one with Kirstie Alley.
No, I don't think I saw that one.
So when she did a they did a spoof on The Wrath of Khan. And the evolution of human beings had women's eyeballs transfer from their head to their breasts so that men would because men are always looking there instead of looking them at the eyes, so they have the eyes on their breasts. It was absolutely hilarious.
Oh, that's good. I'll have to look that one up. I do know, you know, with Shatner hosted, of course, he had a couple of famous skits. One, I think he opened like a restaurant. And then Dana Carvey came in and he was Khan or something like that as the health inspector to shut him down, which is ridiculous. And then, of course, there's the famous, wait, get a life, will you? Have you ever kissed a girl? That became infamous in Shatner's relationship with the fandom. But it was all a good fun, you know?
Well, yeah, it wasn't good fun, and it was a hilarious skit, and I'll never forget John Lovett's face because he had the Spock hairs on, and it was played beautifully, you know. When
but it's
like,
so
get a
spot on. It's you know? Exactly what happens at conventions, man.
It is, and then they flipped it on the end, you know. Oh, it was the bad Kirk.
Yeah,
it was pretty funny, and I thought pretty gutsy. And you know what? I think it also, because now you see, and since that time, right? And I guess you feel bad for some folks that are so enveloped in it. And of course, you know, everybody just has good intent. And people don't realize, I mean, we do now more than ever. And I think, and I'm hoping that things start to shift away from the talent, so to speak, to the people behind the camera more and more and more. Because the people in front of it, they don't care. You know, I mean, some of them do. I shouldn't be like, they don't care, but they you know, it was a job to them a lot of times. And there were some that were Star Trek fans. And now that it's gotten bigger, that's improved. But, you know, I mean, a lot of these folks, they didn't write the words that they were saying. They didn't come up with the concepts. They're enjoyable in their own right. And it's kind of fun. And Lord knows, you know, it's probably secured their financial well-being for a long, long time. But I think that started the whole, you know, when those kinds of questions came up about, well, you know, what was the dial set on this setting?
Mr. Shatner, what is your favorite episode of the original series? Because do you like a third season with the blue titles, or the first two seasons with the yellow? It's like, oh man, that's pain. You get secondhand, like you just cringe. You're like, oh man, like I know you're coming from a good place, man, but they don't know, they don't care, you know?
Oh yeah, they don't. But you see now, right? They boo.
These are the things you run into in Comic-Con, which it's like, oh, but it's, you gotta say, it's entertaining. Like you cringe, but you also laugh about the absurdity of it all, so.
I think so, and I also notice more and more the actors just kind of run with it, right?
Yes.
They'll have fun at their own expense now.
Like Brent Spiner, like, he doesn't really know all this stuff or care, but he has a good time with the fans. He's never condescending. He has a great way of like turning around and making it funny when these ridiculous questions come up. So I think that's the right attitude to find. And, you know, to my point earlier about how the nerds have inherited the earth, you just can't write off this demographic, if you will, of fandom anymore. You got to embrace it, because, you know, if you are rude to a fan, if you really did get a life like Shatner did on the SNL skit, it's going to go viral and people are going to turn against you. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Everything's out there now. I mean, you you can't get away. iPhones and Androids have conquered the world.
Indeed. So, you know, you talk about Saturday Night Live. A sister show to Saturday Night Live would be In Living Color. And they did a Star Trek skit as well. Jim Carrey, James Carrey. Let's not forget, he was James Carrey at the time. You know, Jamie Foxx and all these guys in The Living Color.
Great show.
It was the hip late 80s and early 90s equivalent to Saturday Night Live. And they had a Star Trek skit. It was a little cheesier than the Saturday Night Live skit. But there was the Wrath of Farrakhan, with Louis Farrakhan, the famous, just the famous personality, I guess was the best way to describe him, an activist. The doors open up on the turbo lift, and it's Louis Farrakhan. You know, he has his signature glasses and his bow tie. He's like, I am the minister, Louis Farrakhan.
It was beautiful.
It was so good. It's like tying, of course, the name Khan in there. And Jim Carrey does a great Shatner impression. And, you know, that leads me to, you know, some of my most fond, my sense of humor really was forged by two things in my youth, and it was 1990s Jim Carrey and Mystery Science Theater 3000. Like, that is why I have the sense of humor I do today. And, you know, Jim Carrey, like, he went in Ace Ventura. He did some Star Trek riffs. Like, he was in this pool. They're looking for this dolphin. He's like, he flips open his sunglasses. He's like, Captain's Log, Stardate, blah, blah, blah. We're looking for a blah, blah, blah. And then he throws in, like, a Bones. He's like, damn it, Jim, I'm a doctor, not a pool man. And throws in a Scotty as well. It's just so funny. And, you know, you're not expecting it because, you know, this is before people were busting out Star Trek impressions left and right. So that was great. But then, like, the ultimate, though, to me, in movies, the ultimate Star Trek reference would be in The Cable Guy. Jim Carrey and Matthew Broderick are in it, and it's at medieval times. Have you seen The Cable Guy, Ken?
It is a very strange movie. Yes, I have seen The Cable Guy, and I'm still in counseling. Yeah, I'm still trying to figure it out.
The Cable Guy, it gets a bad rap because it was a little off. It was
dark. It was just odd.
Exactly.
I mean,
The Mask or Ace Ventura or Dumb and Dumber. Like, this was like, this. Oh, you actually went, like, there's actually, like, a message here, and it's kind of dark. And
yeah, Jim Carrey went through quite the transformation from being slapsticky and kind of the, he was the new Robin Williams, right? Because you could tell a lot of the stuff he was doing and was just improv. He just was going on Ace Ventura. That's why when I was, like, rolling my eyes, I was like, oh, that was a tough movie for me to watch.
Oh, that is, like, my favorite comedy of all time.
Wow, okay. Anyway, that's fine. But I'm just saying, you know, I could tell a lot of that was improv. You know, they used to do the same thing with Robin Williams. It'd be like, okay, here's your scene, go. They used to do it with Rodney Dangerfield in the movies he did. You know, they just took it right off his right off his stand-up, and they would let these guys go. And they were all brilliant at what they did. And Jim Carrey, though, he transformed from kind of the zany, crazy, you know, and I remember, too, I actually saw him in one of the first television specials that he was on, comedy specials, and his thing wasn't so much his impersonations, but what he could do to transform his face.
Like rubber face.
He could, I mean, it was amazing. He did this thing on Golden Pond where he was playing Henry Fonda's character and what was the woman, famous actress in it? It's I'm drawing a blank, but like the whole cast, and his face would change in front of you, and it was amazing. And then, you know, he became a very renowned actor, making some, you know, some Truman Story. I mean, a lot
Truman
of
Truman Show, films. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Yeah.
I mean, so the guy was multifaceted, but he was in that transformation. I think Cable Guy was the beginning of that.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, because it is darker. It's not what people quite expected. It's not as remembered as fondly as some of the, you know, the other 90s Carrey movies, but it has the key scene in it is that he works at medieval times, and he gets to fight Matthew Broderick, and they play the Amok Time theme. And they fight with the Lerpa, with the actual props, like, and it's so good. It was like, oh, it's Star Trek right here, man. You know, and Ben Stiller had a hand in this movie as well, and that shows, because he's the, you know, huge Star Trek fan as well. So I mean, that was just so good. And Jim Carrey, as they're fighting, he's like singing along, he's like, bruh, bruh. As he's fighting, he's singing along as he's fighting Matthew Broderick, and man, it's just so good. Like, to me, that's like when I think of Star Trek and pop culture, like, that is the one, that's the first scene that I think of in the Cable Guy there. So, and you know, you haven't seen the Cable Guy in a while, guys, give it a second chance. It actually has a pretty good message about, like, hey, don't let TV take over your life, because it might not be the best thing to happen to you. So,
well, there was a show on HBO or Showtime where, you know, the thoughts in the person's heads was all TV shows, like old TV shows, because he grew up watching TV. And I wish I could remember it. Anyway, I think that show was kind of loosely based on that whole premise, right? Where you just somebody just who got so enveloped by that and so, but it was a great concept, right? To take a scene from an old movie and make that the person's thoughts was brilliant. And I appreciated that a lot. But yeah, Carrie, man, he did a hell of a James Kirk, though. Boy, that look. Like I said, he could transform his face. It's amazing.
Are you?
All right. So do you remember the movie Fanboys, which that was Star Wars versus Star Trek? I don't know if you ever saw that.
You know, I remember it as a thing, but I never saw it because there was a lot of like back and forth. Like, it got delayed, it didn't come out. You know, it didn't quite hit big. Like, I think people thought it was, and they were making it, and then it just kind of came and went. And I just, you know, I never went and sought it out afterwards. So no, I have not seen Fanboys, but I have a familiarity with it.
Yeah, it was okay. It wasn't great, but it had an interesting premise to it, I thought, and it was funny. You know, these were ultra nerds. The time it was made in the mid-2000s, I know that. It was released probably in 2007 or 8, something along those lines. And you know, they meet up with Carrie Fisher and all this stuff, and it's all surrounding Star Wars. But I thought the funniest thing was, so these are huge, huge Star Wars fans, and the movie starts off with a person coming into their comic book store, which is all Star Wars themed, and this guy's looking in a display case, and in it is a phaser. So the guy says, oh, can I take a look at this phaser? And he's about to get it for him. And then he's like, you're a Star Trek fan. And they literally beat them out of the store. It was a trap so that they could kick anybody out that liked Star Trek. But what was a shame about the movie is its original premise was to, you know, it has the Star Wars fans facing off with the Star Trek fans. And Paramount would not allow the studio that was making it to allow the Star Trek fans to wear the Star Trek uniforms or have any of the emblems. So it just kind of lost itself there. And it would have been perfect if Paramount wouldn't have had, you know, whatever, you know, weren't such tight asses and kind of let them go. I mean, you know, this movie wasn't going to be a blockbuster or anything, but it would have been a little bit more fun because these guys are walking around in, you know, stormtrooper uniforms and whatnot. And it's all about trying to get one of their friends who's very sick with cancer into Lucas Ranch to see the Phantom Menace because it's the first movie, you know, in 15, 20 years. And they wanted to see it before he passes. So it had like this quest to it about it. And they, of course, you know, hijinks ensue all throughout the movie. And it had a few good scenes. And I think that the folks from Lucasfilm had a pretty good sense of humor about it because it wouldn't have been made without their approval. And, you know, and actually, they, you know, I'd have to ask Nick about that. I don't know if they actually went to Lucas Ranch to film any of that. But
that's a good, yeah. Let us know, Nick. He would know. And yeah, and Lucasfilm and Lucas, you know, all credit to them. Say what you will about the prequels and the special editions and whatever, right? They have been very supportive of like fan efforts and parodies and all that. I mean, basically, you can make any Star Wars fan film you want as long as you don't make money off of it. Lucasfilm's like, hey, go for it. So they always have a very good, you know, sense of humor and just appreciation for the fans that they're even doing this stuff. So
I just wish, you know, for fanboy, when it's a major motion picture and it's a real one, it couldn't have hurt, you know, to allow them just to go all out. Now, I mean, it's, you know, it's Star Trek and it's all that other stuff. It just would have been funny
now
if they could have had.
From the trailer I saw, Shatner makes a cameo in there, right?
He does. He does. He sells the secrets on how to get into Lucas Ranch. Yes. Yeah. So yeah, he was in there. You know, there was a few cameos, you know, from different folks in there. Like I said, Carrie Fisher was in it, and you know, it was like because I'm a Star Wars fan too, I enjoyed the movie and the aspect of it. It was over the top at times, but it was also it had some touching moments, and the end was absolutely perfect.
Yeah, somebody told me the last line of the movie, and I was like, oh, that is perfect.
It is perfect, so we won't spoil it. Anyway.
So go see Fanboys. I mean, you know, maybe I'll go seek that out now, Ken. I've like I said, I never had before, but this is a good time as any to check it out. So
it's an hour and a half. Excuse me. If you liked Ace Ventura, this is probably 10 to 15 notches above
that. How dare you, sir? Ace Ventura is comedy gold. Like, I quote Ace Ventura as much as I can in everyday conversation. It's genius. Like, you really can use it as often as you can if you're creative enough. Both of the movies, really. So, yeah, forget the cable guy, Ken. You need to rewatch Ace Ventura and its sequel, Ace Ventura When Nature Calls, which are hilarious.
Pillars
of comedy in the United States.
Is Ace Ventura 2 a favorite of yours because it was filmed in Texas? I don't know why I know that, but I do know that.
Ace Ventura 2 was filmed in Texas?
Yeah, it's supposed to take place in Africa, but it was filmed in Texas.
Really? I didn't even know that. So look at you, Kim, pulling out the trivia. I'm usually the trivia guy around here. I'm impressed.
Oh, I've got a lot of useless knowledge in this head. It just comes out at different times. That's all.
But seriously, go rewatch Ace Ventura 1 and 2.
How did we get here?
Oh, boy. Another thing, we mentioned it earlier, Family Guy. Ironically, much like Star Trek, it was canceled by the network. A misunderstood show. Lasted 3 seasons. The fans brought it back. I will say that its first season, when it came back, the fourth season, the first revival season, was really good. And I feel like they continued to kind of phone it in more, decrease in quality as they went. Because, you know, that's a limited... You know, the concept of that show only has so many legs, right? It's like, hey, did you watch TV in the 80s in movies? I did too. Here's some references, you know? And then South Park completely harpooned them with a Family Guy parody episode. I don't know if you ever saw that, Ken.
The one with threatening to show Muhammad on screen.
Yes, with the manatees and the idea balls and all that. Like, I'm not really a South Park guy. I don't really watch it, but, you know, I have a lot of friends that do, and... definitely, I watched that episode. Like, oh man, you got to see this, because we were all Family Guy fans. I'm like, yeah, that kind of sunk Family Guy. But all that being said, Family Guy is still going. Hey, The Simpsons is still going. So, you know, who knows, right? But, you know, Seth MacFarlane, huge Star Trek fan, right? He's even, you know, he's been in a lot of, you know, Star Trek documentaries and special features now coming up.
He was on Enterprise, man.
He cameoed on Enterprise in a couple episodes for sure. So he's a true fan. He understands Star Trek and has a good time with it. And so, you know, they sneak in as many Star Trek references as they can. I think the early seasons of Family Guy are the ones I remember most, and I'm sure most people remember most because it's all we had for a while. Right, much like this original series, you had your 79 episodes and 3 seasons for 10 years, right? Family Guy was very similar. I know in high school, me and my friends, when Family Guy came out on DVD, we used to get together and watch the episodes, you know, over and over and over together. And those are the ones, those are the skits that people remember most. And I remember when they had Shatner and Fiddler on the Roof. He's like, little village. Oh, blah, blah.
Bouncing all over the screen. Well, they had an episode, too, where they had the whole cast of The Next Generation on it.
Yes. Voices, and then Stewie kills Denise Crosby first. It's just the Next Gen cast, that's one scene I remember most is they go to the drive-thru, and it's Will Wheaton. He's like, oh, I want a cheeseburger. No, I want a hamburger. No, I want fries and a milkshake. And then Patrick Stewart says, you'll get nothing and like it. That's so good. But again, one of the early shows, it wasn't really William Shatner, but they met William Shatner. And then they go to like the beer fest together, and they run around in lederhosen and all that stuff. And it's just fun. You know, it's absurd, and you know, in the world of animation, anything is possible, right? So that's what makes it so easy to do, to parody all the shows from all the different timelines, if you will. There has been a lot more Next Generation stuff on, you know, Family Guy and American Dad, considering Patrick Stewart is
a voice on American Dad.
Yeah. He's the main character's boss. And then all of the Next Generation cast have done voiceover work. Like, they've all been on like Gargoyles and, you know, Batman, the animated series, all these shows, they have voiceover work of it. So it's always fun. You know, you see these clips online. You know, that's the great thing about, you know, the social media age these days. Even if you don't watch the shows, you'll see the clips pop up online. They're always pretty fun, and they're always very intelligent. They're self, you know, it's one thing when fans or creators that understand the show make fun of it, right? And then there's another thing when people just like the generic comedy machine of Hollywood or television makes fun of like a property like Star Trek and Star Wars, where they don't really understand it and they're kind of condescending towards it. And I feel like, you know, Family Guy is definitely on the, we're fans, we all love this, but we understand it's fun. Much like you and I, Kim, we love Star Trek, but we love making fun of it as well. So,
well, absolutely. Yeah. It's, as we say, nothing's perfect, right? But, yeah. I'm just smiling. I was thinking about all all the stuff we've been talking about. And, there's a plethora of things. So let's go back a little bit further, Zach. Were you a Seinfeld fan at all?
I am a Seinfeld fan.
Okay. So you know what I'm talking about with Costanza and Khan and all of that.
Yes. They have, you know, they had actually a few references on that. And I don't know if it's the same episode. It might have been, but I know he's like, Khan, you know, then you do the pan up from George in the booth there. Is that the episode where Kramer is at the dojo and he tells he's telling Elaine about the Katra? Do you remember that? Is that
the
same episode? Because I assume there was probably more than one. I mean, Seinfeld. I don't know it encyclopedic by any means, but I am familiar with it. And there's one episode where like Elaine is looking for some kind of advice, and Kramer tells her like you got to get in touch with her Katra and all this stuff, and then she finds out that it's from Star Trek. And she's like, dude, that's from Star Trek. And he's like, Jerry will tell you Star Trek 2, but Star Trek 3 is the superior picture. And I always remember that because I like Star Trek 3 better. But the funny thing is, it's Kramer, and he uses it at his dojo or whatever, and they assume that he's, you know, in an age-appropriate martial arts class, but it's with a bunch of kids. Classic Seinfeld. Kramer and all these kids, you know, getting beat up and stuff. So anyway, that's what I remember. But yes, the famous George yelling up to the sky, Khan, is perfect as well.
Yeah, and I know the Jason Alexander is a big Star Trek fan, right?
He's appeared on Voyager, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And I know that, too. He's been in different specials and has talked about it. I don't know if he's done a Kirk imitation. I tend to remember.
He has done, it was the 35th anniversary special on UPN. I don't know who played McCoy and Spock, but I know Jason Alexander was Kirk, and they were hopping around, and there was some kind of framing device be in modern day to show all these Star Trek clips and stuff. So that he did get to play Kirk as well.
Because I know that Kevin Pollak was the guy who was most famous.
He was spot on, wasn't he?
Spot on, yeah. He was really, really good. Still is pretty good. And they've used him a number of times to imitate Shatner, and has done well with it. And, you know, it's still funny how defensive I get of William Shatner. I think that... There are people that have a certain mannerism in the way they speak, and the way they obviously his very, very distinct style. But I never thought of it as comedic, right? Until you see all these imitations, and of course you just take it to a whole other level.
Out of context, it's hilarious. And then of course for comedy, they always ramp it up. They always ramp it up.
Yeah, huge. And it is funny. But I sometimes when I was younger, I would almost get mad at it. It's like, oh come on, it wasn't that bad, you know, because nerddom hadn't come into its present level in society back then. You know, it is like, stop teasing him, he's good.
It is funny, as we talk about all these parodies, like a lot of them really revolve around someone doing a Shatner impression in one way or another. Like that's a key component of it, right?
Well, yeah, you know, and if you take the biggest parody of them all is Galaxy Quest, right? Everybody says that is a Star Trek episode. And as Tim played that part as being the captain and all of that, it wasn't the mannerisms. It was the losing the shirt and all those types of things that, you know, I think, you know, paid the compliments the most.
And that wasn't just like them doing a parody of Star Trek. Like they did a parody of like the culture of Star Trek. Like they were the actors
Everything. And
the characters, right? And that was so spot on, like at the conventions and all that stuff.
And
like,
the fans. Everything. Yeah, yes.
Justin Long, the Apple guy before he was famous, was the guy with the engine room schematics. They have to call him to figure out how to get out of the spaceship and all that.
Get through the chompers. Yeah.
And then of course the late great Alan Rickman playing the Spock analog. He's like, by grab Thor's hammer, what a savings. Like it's so good. And like, you know, as Star Trek fans, you understand it and you like know exactly what they're talking about. It's hilarious, right? But much like Star Trek 4 crossed over to the mainstream, Galaxy Quest crossed over to the mainstream, because these jokes they work so well for us, but they also work so well for the general public, because it's just a fun film, and it's so like just self-irreverent, right? And that's the key to this comedy.
It is, yeah. And I remember seeing it the first time in the theater and just saying, man, this was great. And you know, the fan costumes, the whole thing. And yeah, and you know, when you say it, and I remember at that time too, and there was probably more in the 90s, and I think it's lessened as time has gone on, you know, that separation between Shatner and the I don't know what the heck do you call them, below the line, second tier, whatever you want to call them, but the rest of the cast, there was that line, and part of it was Shatner's own doing, just the way he described things, right? Well, there's certain people above the line, there's certain people below the line. That's absolutely true. There's nothing wrong about that, but you're not supposed to say that. You know, that's wrong. You know, I mean, it's kind of funny, because no other stars in Hollywood that I know of got that same kind of treatment for stating the obvious, right? You know, I mean, you watch any movie, you get Tom Cruise, you get these big headliners or whatever, and then there's everybody else. Well, there was a pretty strong supporting cast in there, but they're not Tom Cruise, right? And you don't see them eating lunch with him.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, but at any rate, that's what I really liked about it, though, is that it, you know, it has them separated and then coming together in the end. And I think there was a part of that where you were like, gee, I hope that happens in real life. And I think there's been efforts to make that happen. And there's really just one now that just, you know, refuses to play. But it doesn't matter. It's that's what I really enjoyed about Galaxy Quest.
Right. You know, and even stuff like him fighting the rock monster on the planet. You're like, oh, man, it's like in Star Trek V where they're supposed to have a rock monster. Like little stuff like that, too, reminds you of you know, deep Star Trek trivia that way.
They didn't miss a beat. They didn't miss a beat. And that transporter scene was perfect.
And then the security chief not having a name. So good.
Yep.
So seriously, if you guys haven't seen, if you haven't seen any of this stuff, trust me, as Star Trek fans, you'll love it. So if you haven't seen Galaxy Quest, definitely go see it. I mean, I know there was a poll at like a Star Trek convention a few years ago, and it rated Galaxy Quest like as like in the Star Trek movies, and it got rated above a lot of the Star Trek movies. And
yeah,
I'm not gonna. I don't think it belongs in that category, right? But I will say it's a heck of a lot more enjoyable than some Star Trek movies. And I'll leave it at that. So
you might have crossed a line. Bichet's coming after you, I think, because there is nothing that Brandon doesn't love in terms of the movies. You know,
well, as you know, as far as parodies go, Galaxy Quest was in the 90s, but before that we had Spaceballs in the 80s. And
that's right.
Yeah. As Galaxy Quest was to Star Trek, Spaceballs was to Star Wars, and there is some, but even so, there is some Star Trek in Spaceballs. Even you know, there's Alien in there as well. So it's Star Wars is like the framework, but they throw in a lot of other sci-fi franchises in there as well. And Spaceballs, man, I grew up watching Spaceballs. Like, I don't think we ever owned it on VHS, but we rented it like all the time, and just so good. Such a clever send up of the franchise in a time when the parody films were still good. Like, this is in the age of like Airplane and Blazing Saddles and all that. Compare those films to what you have today, like, you know, Scary Movie 7 or, you know, epic movie or superhero movie or these awful, awful parody films. They're just not good anymore, right? And but Spaceballs was still in that golden age of the parody.
Well, it was. Well, you know who really, well, Mel Brooks was the king of it.
Mm-hmm.
He really was. I mean, you say Blazing Saddles, that was really the first and probably the boldest and riskiest parody movie, you know, of Westerns, in the Western genre, because that was so popular. But in 1974, when that movie came out, not only did it rock the world because of its, you know, it took on controversial things and made fun of it, you know, kind of the big screen version of Don Rickles. Nothing was out of scope. He just did a brilliant job with his movies. You know, I loved Young Frankenstein. I loved High Anxiety. All of his movies, you know, after Spaceballs, it didn't really, you know, he kind of struggled. Mm-hmm.
That was like kind of the last hurrah, wasn't it?
Yeah, the Robin Hood one didn't really work, and you know, and he was using a lot of the same people that he'd been using for 20 years and making it, and you know, there was a line here or a line there, and but he himself has always been such a gentleman, a funny guy, and has this ability to just make people laugh. And when the producers did really well on Broadway, you know, I was really happy for him, because you just, you know, he was married to Anne Bancroft, and I'd never been more touched, because they were married for many, many years. And when she passed, I remember his son talking about how his father reacted to that. I don't even know where I'm going with this, but it was just very powerful. But I really enjoyed Spaceballs. You know, as a lot of people know, a lot of times you are assigned call signs in the Navy, right? You don't assign your own, usually. And Spaceballs, as people knew I was a big fan of it or whatever, Lone Star became my call. call sign. But you could, you couldn't just say Lone Star. You had to say it the way Dark Helmet said it. You had to say, Lone Star, like that. Yes. And so when you hear that over the network or over the net, that was actually pretty fun.
That's awesome, man.
So, yeah. So obviously it's a little bit of Spaceballs in all of us, right? But yeah, that was a good movie. And the only thing I really remember was the Scotty scene in the transporter, and you know, why didn't somebody tell me my ass was so big? That was a great line.
Yeah. Oh man, good stuff. And then, you know, before we'll get into the Babel Conference comments here in a second. Before we wrap it up, we would be remiss to not mention Futurama and their episode Where No Fan Has Gone Before. Now, Standard Orbit, way back in the day, in our first iteration of the show, did a commentary on Where No Fan Has Gone Before called Piece of Gold Inside a Gold Shirt. That's episode 20. Mike and Drew did that back in the day. So this is seriously early days of Standard Orbit. But if you guys are interested in hearing their commentary on that episode, go back and check it out. And that is, like I was saying, those guys understood the Family Guy, much like the Family Guy guys, the Futurama guys understood Star Trek. And it was a parody, but it was so spot on. Like, even the little things made me LOL in that episode. Like, you know, if you're not familiar with it, it's the cast of TOS. And in the Futurama future, they're all heads. Like, when people die, they become heads in a jar. So it's kind of weird. But anyway, Fry and the whole team from Futurama encounter them on a planet. And hijinks ensue, right? There's a super powerful entity who's a huge Star Trek fan. And him and Fry, the main character of Futurama, try to, like, out-Star Trek fan each other. It's so good. Even little stuff like, I have scripts for all of you. Except for George and Walter, you have to share. Like, I don't know why that was so funny to me, but it's just a little thing. And probably my favorite though is when they're doing this fake episode, and Melvar is the name of the entity directing them. You know, the actors aren't really giving that great a performance, and people are getting frustrated. And Nimoy says he speaks up and says, you know, when I was directing Star Trek IV, I got such a great performance out of Bill because I respected him as an actor. And then Shatner says, yeah, and now when I was directing Star Trek V, I got such a great performance out of myself because I respected me as an actor. And it's, you know, it's that self-aware parody that's so good. And it's their real voices, and that's what really makes the episode. I mean, it's really William Shatner and really Leonard Nimoy and really Walter Koenig and George Takei and Nichelle Nichols. So I definitely recommend all you guys go watch that episode and then watch it again with our commentary from episode 20 of Standard Orbit, not our commentary, but our predecessor's commentary. So,
oh yeah, hey, commentary's been a hot subject lately.
Commentaries, that's right.
No, that's good stuff. All right, man, you ready to start pulling out some of these things that we got from the Babel Conference? We got some great references in here.
Yeah, let's hit it, Ken.
All right, I'm going to start with the first one, Tim Cooper, who was very quick to respond as soon as the post was put up, talking about the Big Bang Theory. And talk about a franchise that has just, you know, solidified its standing by. I know there's a lot of Star Trek fans that do not like the Big Bang Theory, and it's kind of hit or miss with me, to be honest with you. I've seen some where I thought were pretty funny, and others I was like, eh, but and it's been playing for a long time, but they do a ton. I mean, a ton of Star Trek, and there's been quite a few people from Star Trek on the show. I don't know if you've seen a few of their episodes, but I do remember, too, when they were going to, I think it was San Diego, or to a Star Trek convention, and their car breaks down, and they get robbed at Vasquez Rocks. But, man, Sheldon looked exactly like Data. It was amazing. And, you know, they put a lot into it, but the references are ever constant, right? And Tim talks about one called the Transporter Malfunction. Where he's playing with a Spock figure and the toy transport inadvertently breaks it. It's like, oh, that's perfect. Just considering Star Trek the Motion Picture and all, but there's a lot in there. And like I said, there's references, I think, pretty much almost on every episode. And they talk about the movies a lot, too. And
well, here's my deal with the Big Bang Theory. And this is controversial, I'm sure, for a lot of listeners. Like, I do not like the Big Bang Theory.
This is controversial. Very controversial.
I don't like the Big Bang Theory. Maybe because I've just been conditioned to, like, everyone I know in my real life is like, oh, man, do you watch Big Bang Theory? Like, you totally like it, man. Like, they talk about all the stuff you like, man. And, like, you know, some of my best friends watch this show, and they're like, oh, man, it's so funny. This reminds me of you and your friends. I'm like, okay, yeah, thanks. I don't know. Like, I think I think when it started, you know, its heart was in the right place, but I think it's become so mainstream now. Like, it's gotten so generic. Because I've seen bits and pieces there. And look, I'll admit, I'll laugh sometimes when I see it. But I think just the general overall approach of the show is like, Penny will walk in and they'll be talking about Spider-Man. She's like, Spider-Man, what's that? You guys are losers. Like, really? Like, just because they know, like, someone will say the word Star Wars and, like, the laugh track will come up. Like, oh, these losers are talking about Star Wars. So it's like, I don't know. Like, it's this weird catch-22 because I truly believe the Big Bang Theory success is part of why we've had this, like, nerd renaissance, right? It's made all this stuff, all this terminology, you know, mainstream again, right? Going to the comic store, the con convention. People, these are their points of references. When I say, like, yeah, I went to Comic-Con, people think of, oh, yeah, that episode of the Big Bang Theory, right? So that's a touch point, touchstone for people, and that's great. But at the same time, it's perpetrated a stereotype of nerds, like the ones who I was impersonating earlier, like this, you know, like we're not all like that, you know, like everybody's not Sheldon, right? And so it's an interesting catch 22. And if I watched more of the show, I'd probably like it more. But just from the bits and pieces and stuff that I've seen and heard from people, I'm like, oh, like, I don't know. So that's my take on it. What do you think about that, Ken? Is that a fair point of view for me to have, or what?
Sure it is, and I know exactly what you're talking about. Like I said, I don't have a hard opinion that it's great or it's bad. There's episodes I've seen where I was laughing pretty hard, and my wife, my kids, they like it a lot. So a lot of times I'll be watching it with them, and sometimes, like I said, it's a very hit or miss show. But when they do the Star Trek things, and I remember one where they had George Takei as kind of like a conscience, a guardian angel, you know, as a coach, and It was really, really well done. And so there are times when they just hit it, or, you know, where they're out there playing practical jokes, and, you know, they got Carrie Fisher was in that too. And you know, again, I think that there are times where it really takes off and when it doesn't. But to your overall point, I know exactly what you're talking about. I was that guy when it came to Friends. I didn't get it. I just never thought it was very funny, and I don't know why the formula didn't work, because I'm like the one person that I know that just watches that show and just says, okay, silly gag, and then there's the quick shot to the perfect for the reaction shot, right? It would just go gag reaction, and to me it just didn't play, and I never got into it, and I know I was the outlier, right? Because it was so popular. You know, Cheers was one of my favorite shows, and I loved it, and I got it, and of course it was Boston and all that stuff. And then, you know, Friends would come on, and I'd go, ah, you know, and back then that was really my generation, the my age group, the whole thing. Maybe they were a little younger, but not much. And you know, I just didn't connect to it. So I'm sure that's very similar for you. For whatever reason, you know, you just are like, no, it just doesn't mesh. So I don't think it's that big a deal. And like I said, I know a lot of people in the Star Trek fandom that just viscerally dislike it. You know, they look at it as just, you know, they don't get the parody. They just find it to be very insulting. And I don't think that's the intent at all myself, but I understand where they're coming from.
Well, then as an overall critique of comedy on television these days, I much prefer, like, I'm so over the laugh track comedy. You know, like, my favorite comedies are The Office or Community,
yes.
Right?
I'm
so
with you,
ones
yeah.
that it's all inferred and it doesn't, like, tell you when to laugh. Because have you ever seen these videos on YouTube or whatever when people have taken out the laugh track? It's so awkward because someone will say a line like, huh, you're telling me, Ken. It's like silence. And it's like, you know, they pause. Like, who talks that way? But anyway, that's another conversation. Look, if you enjoy The Big Bang Theory, more power to you. It's apparently never going to end, or is it? I don't know. It's been on for 10 years, and it's still going. So I think every couple years you hear, oh, could this be the final season? The cast is getting – it's like you said, it's like Friends of today. Right? You always hear about the cast renegotiating these huge contracts. It's like the number one comedy. And, hey, it's connecting with a lot of people. So, you know, that's what entertainment's all about. So if you like it, more power to you. Just not my cup of tea. I'll watch my 6 seasons of Community. they got canceled, and the 6th season had to be on Yahoo.
No, I do agree with you, though. I find the laugh tracks now very, very distracting when I'm watching a show. It's one thing, too, if it's filmed before a live audience, because you can tell that. But I don't believe Big Bang. It might be. I don't get the impression that it is. It sounds, every laugh sounds the same. But
now I will say this. Tim's next comment, and I did see this part of this episode. because, like I said, I have friends that watch this all the time, so I'll see it, you know, in the background and whatever. But he says, another great episode is the one where he orders Sheldon. He orders the life-size cardboard cutout of Spock, but gets the Zachary Quinto version by mistake. Like, I just, and I was like, that's pretty good. I will say, that's pretty good. So, yeah, and Tim, you share a surname with Sheldon, so that's pretty cool. I don't know if that's a connection there or not for you, but cool. The next comment's from Brian Yates, and he says, several Star Trek actors have been on Stargate, which had many Star Trek references. My favorite is Colonel O'Neill wanting to name the ship the Enterprise and being disappointed that he was overruled. There's also the episode where John Billingsley played a scientist who is a Trekkie. So he's going to post some more detailed info on the Star Trek Stargate references later. So, and as Ken said, well, we're probably going to revisit this topic more regularly so we can delve deeper into that kind of stuff then. So,
did you watch Stargate? Because I never got into it.
I did not. I did not watch Stargate. I just, you know, Smallville had taken over my life at the time. You know, Enterprise was on. I was checking that out. I mean, you know, high school, you only got so much time for TV. So, you know, it's been marching band. That takes a lot of time, you know, having a social life. So I could only have a few. I only had so much time in life for a few nerd indulgences. And Stargate just did not make the cut for whatever reason. But I have friends that swear by it. I think it's a great show. So, I mean, one day when I run out of Star Trek to watch or whatever, I'll probably check it out.
Yeah, there's Stargate, there's Babylon 5. There's a few of them out there that people really, really love and enjoy. Oh,
Babylon 5 is amazing. And Norm will swear to Babylon 5. He's a big Babylon 5 fan. I am as well.
Oh, he's huge, yeah.
Babylon 5 is my dad's favorite TV show of all time.
Oh, okay. So I have seen bits and pieces, but I one of those things where, you know, now it's coming into summertime in New England, so I will be out and about. But when wintertime comes, and if there's ever any downtime, it'll be great to kind of binge watch through these things, and now that you can, and see it from square one, because I do have an interest, I just don't have time.
Yeah, the barriers to entry was always pretty strong in the past, but now that everything is on streaming somewhere. Like, there is some streaming service that has what you're looking for, you just need to find and look for it. So it's a lot easier than like, oh, what am I supposed to do? Like go rent these DVDs from Blockbuster, right? You know, way to date ourselves there. But I mean, before, you know, in this modern age, like, when were you going to go watch every episode of Stargate? You just weren't. You were going to set the VCR to record it when it comes on 2 a.m. on UPN on repeats, you know? So it is easy to check this stuff out now. So yeah, down the road, Ken, we'll have to delve into this stuff.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, what do we have next?
Then our friend Tony Black, who's hosted with us a couple times here on Standard Orbit. He says, young Fox Mulder in The X-Files, dressed up as Spock in Family Home Videos. And, they occasionally show, you know, Mulder and Scully when they were kids on The X-Files. And of course, Mulder, who else would he be dressed up as than Spock, right? Being the alien guy that he is. And so, it's, you know, this little kid dressed up, you know, with the Spock ears and all that stuff. So that's a good little Star Trek callback on The X-Files for sure.
That was brilliant too, and I did remember that. I am an X-Files fan, and though I haven't watched it in a few years, that was the big event, making sure everybody was ready to go when that show came on. And again, any reference to Star Trek, I'm like, yeah, two thumbs up. So the next one we had was from Tim Hans, and he talks about Airplane 2. And, you know, I was a airplane. We were talking about those movies from back in the 80s that kind of started the whole thing. And once you, you know, they say that, you know, parody is the best form of compliments, but most complimentary thing, right, is parody. I can speak well. And, you know, I really enjoyed both airplane movies. The first one was really funny, but the second one with William Shatner, that came out not too long after, I believe, Star Trek II. And he was fresh off that, so I think it caught a lot of people by surprise that he was having fun kind of at his own expense, and they had a lot of great Star Trek references, especially in the clip that he provided. You know, I just remember him going crazy over the blinking lights. They just blinking, and he just shuts everything off. And it was very funny, very very great Shatner. Of course, Airplane was a Paramount, so they could use a lot of the stuff, but. You know, when they're looking at the device that's right from every Star Trek science fiction movie and ever made with those stupid lights. That actually bothered me in The Wrath of Khan. when I saw that device in there. Because it's like, I've seen this 100 times. Come on, guys. You know, you can do better.
Like, you see that stuff in Mystery Science Theater 3000 movies, you know? Like, in the bad movies they're watching.
But that exact prop I have seen more times than you could shake a stick at. And it's like, why did they throw it in? But that was a good call out, Tim. That was very funny. And, you know, I love the fact that this topic has resonated, because a lot of people are coming up with some great things.
Yeah, Lisa Brown comments on The Big Bang Theory again. She says, while I'm not much a fan of the show, same here, Lisa, there's a moment in The Big Bang Theory where Sheldon and Raj argue over Star Trek movies. It's fantastic.
I'll have to find that. I think I did see that scene. And like I said, because we're having the same discussions, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, we make a quote-unquote living off of this, right?
I would not say we make a living, no. But we definitely have a lot of fun off it.
For sure.
You know, unless... Did you get a new contract? You didn't tell me.
You know, I think it's something best to discuss off the air, Ken. I don't want to air our...
The hell is going... Oh, I see. Oh, that's why I get the title and you get the money. I see how this works. Okay. Very good.
Positioning is key. Ian Coomber says, I love how in Spaced, Simon Pegg argues that every odd-numbered Star Trek movie is, I'll say, rubbish. Then he also put a Spaced reference in Beyond. That is, again, the odd-even. I think maybe that is what helps cement the odd-even rule for a lot of people. You know, Simon Pegg there. I certainly disagree with the odd-even rule. I'm sure you do as well. Both of our favorite movies are odd movies, Ken. So we're a bit odd ducks in that way, as far as our Star Trek film fandom goes.
Yeah, funny how that works. But I haven't seen Paul, and I've heard it was really good. Or Spaced, I'm sorry. I keep thinking of Paul every time I think of Simon Pegg, because he was in that as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was Paul. He wasn't Paul. That's right. Seth Rogen was Paul.
Seth Rogen was Paul. Thank you.
Nick Frost and Simon Pegg were their, you know, basic buddy comedy, same vein as you know, Hot Fuzz or Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah. All right, let's keep rolling here. April Taylor just kind of backs up the Tarantino the piece of the original post that I put up there for the Star Trek one. But I just love the way she wrote, "We are everywhere, and it is good." I thought that was a great line. I like it. And then Tim comes back with Carol Burnett. Now, Carol Burnett was probably one of the things that, you know, Saturday Night Live was one thing, but Carol Burnett was brilliant. She is brilliant. And that cast was phenomenal. And I've seen Carol. I saw Carol Burnett just a year ago in New York. She did a kind of a show where she looks back at her history and plays a lot of clips from the TV show and talks about how they would, you know, actively work to try to break each other up. And she was so funny, and that cast was so good. And there's a YouTube that you have to check out with her as Captain Kirk, and pulls it off quite well. So nice call out, Tim, because this was funny when you pulled it out. I was actually smiling because I just remember being a kid, and my mother, you know, she's since passed, but she loved Carol Burnett. And it was very nostalgic for me to see Carol Burnett live and in person, and then see this. It just brought back a lot of good memories.
So Carol Burnett's like your Jim Carrey, is what you're saying, Ken?
Not like that, no. No, not quite like that.
The Mount Rushmore of comedy. Carol Burnett, Jim Carrey, right next to each other up there.
Very, very, very different. And obviously with Carol Burnett and that whole team, they had I don't want to say a sophisticated way, but it was... They were just so funny, and you could tell they were having so much fun doing it. And that's what I loved about those variety shows back then, because so many of them were hit or miss. And Carol Burnett was on from the late 60s right up till the late 70s. She had a very long run. And like I said, that cast just, you know, it was like lightning in a bottle. And they all played beautifully off each other. So, you know, she was mentored by Lucille Ball, which was fascinating, right? And she kind of took that mantle because Lucy was it in the 50s and 60s. I mean, she was huge, and, you know, and one of the first real breakthroughs as a woman in comedy. And so many aspiring female comedians looked up to Lucille Ball, and here's a person who was actually mentored by her. I think it's a great story, and just of itself.
For sure. And then Suzanne Williamson, one of the hosts of To the Journey, says, I love when Star Trek references come up in songs. The Hanukkah song by Adam Sandler, 99 Red Balloons by Nina, and Intergalactic by the Beastie Boys are my faves. And then Tim Hans goes on to say, no more so than Star Trekkin' by The Firm. I think all those are great songs. You know, Tim, the one you mentioned is hilarious. Are you familiar with the one he's talking about there?
No, like I'm Star familiar with Where Trekkin' is Captain
Across
Kirk?
The Universe on the Starship Enterprise under Captain Kirk. Well, I'll find it. I'll post it. It's hilarious. Perhaps we might put it in the episode. We'll see. You have to stay tuned to the end to hear, guys. But yeah, the Hanukkah song is great. So spin a dreidel with Captain Kirk and Mr. Spock. And then, you know, what is the Star Trek reference in? Oh, yeah, that's right. They say Captain Kirk, 99 Red Balloons.
I think Red Alert as well. Yeah. It all fades from that.
And then Intergalactic, of course. Yeah. So Beastie Boys. Why are they going to put Intergalactic in one of these Star Trek movies? If for nothing else, I want Star Trek 4 in the Kelvin timeline so we can hear Intergalactic in the movie, because that's a great song. That's probably my favorite Beastie Boys song. So Intergalactic, na-na-na-na, Intergalactic. There you go. Now we're going to have to pay the Beastie Boys, but it was worth it. So Lee posted this British show. Do you want to speak on that, Ken?
Well, it's Scottish, and first of all, Lee, thank you for sharing that. I watched that just before we started recording, and I was laughing. I have a facility in Edinburgh, so I get out there every 4 or 5 months, and once you go to Scotland, you just fall in love with it. The people there are magnificent and funny, great sense of humor, and the dialects across Scotland are wide and varied, as Lee can tell you. And in Edinburgh, I can understand people well. You have to really focus. But you go to people that have an accent from Glasgow or up in the Highlands, and you wouldn't even know what language they're speaking. And this just parodies that to no end. And it's absolutely hilarious. So if you haven't been on the Babel Conference, or if you're not a member, become one. And look up this original post when we talk about pop culture references to Star Trek, because Lee posted beauty, the Taysiders in space, and I was just rolling, and really trying to focus and trying to, you catch every third word, and it was magnificent, brilliant. Thank you, Lee. That just made my day.
Now I posted a lot of commercials, but I think we'll put a pin in the commercials, and we're going to talk about all this stuff again another time. So we'll wrap back around in a sequel episode of this and talk about a lot of the Star Trek commercials that I posted on the Babel Conference thread there. But I do want to get to my friend Lance posted a couple of clips, and you're a Frasier fan.
Do you
remember the episode where Frasier does a Klingon speech for his son at his bar mitzvah?
I didn't until this was posted by Lance. I did not. I did watch the show. I haven't watched it since it was originally aired, just like Cheers, but I love those shows. Yeah.
And Kelsey Grammer, obviously a huge Star Trek fan, he cameoed in Cause and Effect on TNG as Captain Bateson. And, you know, there were lots of little Star Trek jokes and stuff, in his comedy. But this is probably, if you had to pick one scene from Frasier, it can't be more spot on than the Klingon speech here. So good. And then in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon, not the like famous one from the 80s that everybody knows, but there's a current one going on Nickelodeon, and it's CGI, right? And Leonardo, one of the Ninja Turtles, he has his favorite cartoon is Space Heroes, but what it is, it's Star Trek the Animated Series is what it is. Like, it is legit, like in the same way like C-Lab 2021 on Cartoon Network is like a redrawn old show of something else that I forget. This is a redrawn Star Trek the Animated Series. Like, it is so, like, they changed some hair color and some uniforms, but it's Star Trek the Animated Series, and it's so funny to see them watch this show. It's so spot on, especially if not only if you're just a Star Trek fan, but if you're a Star Trek the Animated Series fan and familiar with it, because it's such a niche thing as it is, for them to kind of to go that deep and pull that out, it's just so hilarious. And it's a recurring thing too, and more than one episode. It's called Space Heroes, which is like the most generic thing you could think of, and I just think that's hilarious. And Lance posted a clip, so you guys definitely go check it out. You'll get a laugh from it.
Yeah, definitely. We'll check it out. It looks brilliant. I can't wait. And the last one we had for today was from K. Elizabeth Shaw from To the Journey.
To the Journey. They don't do that anymore, do they?
You know what? They have taken that show and have done a brilliant job with it. And it's a lot of fun to listen to. The chemistry between the three of them is phenomenal.
It's almost as good as our chemistry, Ken.
It's just about there. Yeah, yeah. We had a little bit of a head start. Just kidding. It's just as good. But anyway, it's yeah. I enjoy some Voyager. I'm not a huge Voyager fan, but I've always been a fan of To the Journey. Whether it was, you know, Tristan and Char, and now with Kay, Suzanne, and Zachary, and it's just a fun podcast. And you know, I also like, because they get a little racy at times, and I just enjoy that. It's like, you know, they're just a bunch of free spirits that have a great time, and their love of the show just it just permeates through it, right? And that's it's like an infectious laugh. Everybody can just kind of go along with it, right? And so she talks about, there's a reference, and she's, you know, she's English, right? So there's a lovely little reference, right? And in Orange is the New Black, where one of the characters mentions Spock to Red, and I know that's Kate Mulgrew's character, and she doesn't have a clue who that is. And so my wife started watching Orange is the New Black. I think she binge watched it a few months ago. And I was catching it, some of it. She was watching it on her computer, so I'd see different things. And, you know, it looked like a pretty intense show. And Mulgrew's character, Red, you know, the Russian chef inmate or whatever she is, she does a really brilliant job. I mean, you can tell she's got some pretty strong acting chops. But that would be perfect. I mean, it's great that they brought that full circle. And we'll have to see if we can find that. So thank you, Kate, for sharing. We do appreciate it.
Well, I think that's a good place to stop today, Ken. As you said, we'll keep delving into these as we go. I'm sure the comments will keep rolling in some more references. I mean, there's just so many out there. I'm sure the ones off the top of our head and the first batch of comments there are just scratching the surface. So I look forward to delving into this more, because as you said, the more people bring up from other things, you're like, oh yeah, I remember that. And oh man, I never heard of that. That looks fun. It's just a fun way to reminisce about the way pop culture has really embraced and celebrated Star Trek through comedy over the years. But trekking through pop culture isn't the only thing we're discussing this week on Trek FM. Here's what else is playing on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
All right, I'll tell you what. You know, I have never, ever, ever worn a costume or cosplayed or anything like that. Now the challenge, the gauntlet has been out there. We're going to have to put together a Mugatu costume.
Mugatu costume.
We got to.
To the journey!
Make him taller. Give him some salt and pepper gray hair.
Yeah. Make those shoulders broader.
Computer, put a tattoo over his left eye. Oh my god, look what I just did!
I made a Chakotay.
Warp 5.
Are you an outside entity that is watching you deal as the bad archer with the good archer? And Scott just looks at me and turns around and goes, oh, God, will someone come here and get Gary a strip?
Meta Treks.
But these Romulans are still walking around in those nasty pointy shoulder tunics that they wear. I mean, what's up with that?
Doesn't seem like they shed as much of their identity as the Klingons
did. Yeah, not shedding as much of their identity.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, get the show on iTunes or the Apple Podcasts app. Be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, Speaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well. If you would like to get in touch with us here at Trek FM, you can always find us on trek.fm/contact and look in the sidebar on the show page. Or you can go to speakpipe.com/trekfm and please leave us a voice message. You can also contact us through Twitter at Trek FM, Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, and the Babel Conference. Type the Babel Conference, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, or go to our website at trek.fm and click discussion on the menu bar. Another way you can help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week is to become a patron of the network on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels, along with all the great perks we have for you. These perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats on the content development team, and more. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. And speaking of Patreon, thank you as always to our associate producers for Standard Orbit: Renee Roberts, Norman Lau, Aaron Harvey, Tim Robertson, Nick Anastasio, and Richard Marquez. Thank you so much for all of your support for both Standard Orbit and Trek.fm through Patreon. You can find Renee on Twitter at MRES_1701, Norm on Twitter at Starfighter1701, Aaron on Twitter at GeekFilter, and Tim on Twitter at TimRobertson56. And Nick and Richard aren't on Twitter, but you can find them on Facebook and around the Babel Conference. As for me personally, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach, that's MOOREONZACH, and you can find my other podcast, Always Hold On to Smallville, on Twitter at AlwaysMallville with one S, and we cover the Young Superman show, Smallville, that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW.
So if you're looking for me on the network, you can find me on the Babel Conference. I'm always on there, pre-post shows, talking different subjects with all our listeners. And you can also find me on Twitter at Boston, SCPO. That means Boston, Senior Chief Petty Officer.
So thanks, everyone, for listening. And join us again next time here on Trek FM for another episode of Standard Orbit.
Bye.